This is a CBC podcast. Make your own profile at the CBC Member Center, and you can post comments, photos, and videos at cbc.ca. You can also sign up for our news, sports, entertainment, radio, and podcasting newsletters. Just head to cbc.ca to sign up for the CBC Online Member Center.
Hello, pod friends. You've downloaded the best of Definitely Not the Opera. I'm Sukhyun Lee, and I am a dirty, rotten liar. And so are you. Them's fighting words, I know, but think about it. On any given day, if you were forced to take a tally, you would find you're constantly lying. White lies, exaggerations of the truth, and sometimes you tell the blackest hole of a lie your conscience wrestles with and loses to. For instance, what did I say first thing this morning when a coworker asked me how I was? Fine, I said to him. When the truth is, I should not have eaten all that dark chocolate at midnight last night because it kept me tossing in a fitful sweat under my sheets. And then when I finally fell asleep 2 hours before I had to wake up, I had the most horrible nightmares about people falling out windows. I mean, I could have told my coworker the sordid details of my private life drama, but the truth is, that would have made me look like a freak, which I am, which I don't want you to know about, which now you know anyway. So this week on the Best of DNTO, let's look at all the various reasons why we lie. Here's what's coming up. Now, it turns out humans and hognose snakes lie for some of the same reasons. Find out just what we have in common when I chat with evolutionary biologist Dr. David Livingston Smith. And crooner Rami Mays will tell us about the best lie she ever told and how it got her a meeting with the Beastie Boys. And Trish Cooper drops by to explain why sometimes when everyone in a family is lying to each other, it's okay. Now, what better way to uncover the truth than to go straight to the horse's mouth? Yours. Hi, I'm Sukhyun Lee from Definitely Not the Opera. Now, I promise not to divulge your identity, but please tell me the truth. What is one lie you're living right now?
Right now, I'm a performer in a burlesque company, and I really, really love it. However, I have several people who I tell that I'm in a dance company, like my employers.
Why did you feel the need to lie about that?
The stigma. Not a lot of people really understand what the word burlesque means, and sometimes I don't really have the time to go through the whole political explanation of, no, not a stripper, but kind of, but not really. And
do you think they would judge you poorly and call you a stripper?
Yes. The job that I have is one where I work with the public in healthcare. I'm afraid it would be seen as inappropriate. But then there's also the question of, sometimes my face is on posters. Sometimes I need to take time off work. It's really hard because the better I do, the more chance there is that I will potentially be punished for it.
I work in an office that writes essays for students who hand them in as their own.
How do you feel about living that lie?
I don't think I live a lie, but I know that almost all of my clients do, and I don't feel really great about helping them do that.
Okay, so it's interesting that you don't see yourself as lying. Do you think that's partly self-deception?
I have a part, I guess, in their lie. I don't lie to anyone. I don't lie to them, and I don't lie to my friends about what I do.
Okay, so then how do you justify your involvement in educational fraud?
I don't. I just need the money.
I lie about a lot of things. I'm not honest about when I often talk to people I haven't seen for a long time, I don't tell them the truth about what I'm actually doing in life because I'm ashamed of where I'm at. I do everything that nobody else wants to do. I move garbage around. I move boxes from A to B. Essentially, that's what I do, a lot of manual labor. There's a reason why I'm lying. I hate seeing the look of disappointment in other people's faces, this feeling of you're not of a certain income level. You should be further ahead than what you are. What's your excuse? What's your problem? You know.
Why do you think you lie about your job to other people?
Everyone wants to be appreciated, liked. It makes me feel like I'm included as opposed to excluded from my fellow human being. If I have to lie to feel somewhat respected or somewhat appreciated or to remain friends with somebody, then I will.
Very, very interesting, n'est-ce pas? Now, were those mere excuses for lying or sound logic to protect you and others from knowing the truth? This is definitely not the opera. Okay, so our next guests have been called pranksters, culture jammers, and activists. But when you get right down to it, they're also really good liars. The Yes Men make fake websites, and they pretend to be bigwigs at major corporations and organizations like Dow Chemical and the World Trade Organization. Andy Bickelbaum and Mike Bonanno are in the studio in Austin, Texas, to explain the method behind their madness. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hey, so you guys, the Yes Men, you have told some whoppers of lies. One of your more elaborate hoaxes happened at Canada's largest oil conference in Calgary a couple of years ago. Mike, first of all, can you explain who was at the conference and how you wrangled your way in?
The conference was filled with some of the top oil extraction corporations in the world. And we wrangled our way in by promising one of the celebrities of oil culture, Lee Raymond, the CEO or former CEO of ExxonMobil, the mere promise of getting something of that celebrity status to their conference made them, you know, open the door for us. And at the last moment, of course, Lee Raymond could not show up. And we had to go up there representing ExxonMobil.
Andy, can you pick up the story from there?
Right. So we replaced him as representatives of Exxon and presented what must be Exxon's solution to climate change. And we figured that solution must be to turn all the people who die into fuel. And so we presented that solution as Exxon and passed out candles made of this prototype new fuel, human flesh. Told the people there after they were burning that they were made of human flesh and got kicked out.
And so they held us in a holding tank for about an hour while they fetched the police, who they were sure were going to do something very drastic to us, like throw us in jail for a very long time. And to their credit, the Calgary police came by, asked us what we were up to. We told them everything, and they laughed and then forced the conference organizers to release us. So it worked out pretty well.
So what were you trying to accomplish through this prank?
Well, I mean, sometimes we might have what's called a white lie that actually helps reveal a truth or reveal an even bigger lie. Like in the case of the what Exxon's been doing, which is a concerted campaign, a serious effort to undermine climate science. And it's well documented that they've supported think tanks that have been publishing scientific papers and policy papers that say that climate change isn't a problem. And so when you have a major oil company that's actually causing climate change at the same time sort of trying to pull the wool over everybody's eyes and not change policy, that's really the big lie that we're surrounded with. And so what we do is just try to publicize the big lie by telling a little lie. And you know, it usually opens the door. There's a lot of media coverage for the things that we do. And it's an excuse for journalists to write about the really big lies.
It's interesting. The both of you seem to be using the same tactic. So it's like everyone's lying. And do you think with all these lies circulating, we can know more of the truth?
Well, the difference between the way we lie and the think tanks lie is that they try very hard to pass off their lies as truth and may even believe that they're truth. Whereas we know full well what we're doing is lying, making these fun white lies. And we reveal them to be lies immediately. So what you're left with us is more truth and a peeled back lie. And what you end up with them is layer upon layer of lies.
Interesting. So how do the Yes Men get people to buy your outrageous lies?
One way that we've often gotten invited to conferences is just setting up fake websites that look like our targets. Another way is to pose as public relations companies and offer whoever we want.
You guys have the jargon down too.
Is that a joke? Are you
not
joking?
No, I'm not joking. I'm serious. Oh. I could imagine you getting on the phone and acting like a publicist.
Yeah, I mean, we for every conference that we do, you know, they're often quite esoteric, you know, and you have to study very quickly to learn a little bit of the jargon so that you can actually understand what other people are saying. That's maybe more important than sounding official. Because once people think that you are somebody important, that doesn't really matter, like, how you sound or what words you use. They're still sufficiently impressed with your position that they will just pretty much go along with whatever you're saying.
Yeah, you guys use kind of similar voices to what you have now, kind of flat, articulate, intelligent voices when you're hoaxing.
Now you're making fun of us again.
I'm not lying.
So, flat.
Yes, men. Well, sort of flat. You know, you're like, duh, 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 duh. You sound very learned.
Oh, yeah, well, you're like, duh, 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 duh,
public radio style.
Okay, yeah, you're right. I know. Okay, let's push it up the next level. Ask us some difficult questions. We're going to give some lively answers now. Here we go.
Have you, what have you learned, you know, about people? Corporations, large groups of people. What have you learned about people through your lying pranks?
Wow.
That's a good question.
What have we learned about people? Well, we've learned that people are gullible, but we already knew that. We are gullible ourselves. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that's beautiful and makes us human and makes us enjoy art and music and stories. But it's also a thing that has a dark side, and we can believe some really hideous lies, you know, and we've seen historically many times when entire populations have gone along with crazy ideas that were in the end really damaging to people and the environment. So we can either acknowledge the sort of beauty of the lies that we like to engage in and try to prevent the bad ones from happening, or we can just, you know, merrily enjoy life without doing anything. And so I'm not making any sense. So let's see what Andy has to say.
No, yeah, exactly. I mean, we can either do something and try to pierce the lies, or we can just go along with the lies and not, and then we'll end up with whatever truth those lies are masking, which is the truth of a future that's horrible. You know, Whoa. If we believe that the oil companies actually are going to ensure our energy security, we're going to end up with a really horrible future.
That's a lot of effort you go to pull off your pranks. Why do you go to all that trouble?
Because everything, our entire future is riding on being able to actually get at the truth right now and to being able to understand that we are careening toward our doom unless we change the way we go about our daily business. And, you know, right now we still are focused, even during this moment of an economic catastrophe. We're still thinking about how do we get back on track with growth? You know, how do we get the economy back on track? And really, we need to rethink what our economy is in the first place. And, you know, whether we need growth at all or whether we need to replace it with something that isn't going to use everything up and make the world unlivable for us. And so, you know, this is the moment to unmask the big lie. And if we don't, there's a very good chance that there won't be a future. I mean, you know, there will be a future, but it might be shorter than humanity wants it to be.
Yeah. And there's a lot of ways to unmask the lie, and telling fun lies is just what we happen to be good at. We can make this kind of comedy and hopefully contribute to this movement that's trying to change the way we do things.
Hey, well, thank you guys for talking to me today about the interesting elements of lying that you've experienced.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Andy Bickelbaum and Mike Bonanno. They are two of the Yes Men. They're in Austin this week promoting their new film, The Yes Men Fix the World. If you want to find out more about them, check out their website, theyesmen.org. This is the best of DNTO, where this week, our pants are on fire! As often is the case, one lie leads to another, leads to several, and then suddenly you are trapped in a web of deceit. Here's a guy who learned all about that when he was just knee-high to a grasshopper. Take it away, Scott Montgomery.
This story takes place when I was in the first grade. I guess I was desperate to somehow establish myself as being different or interesting on some level that was above and beyond the pedestrian classmates that surrounded me every single day. So I decided to concoct a doozy of a story for the daily ritual of show and tell. Let's face it. After a couple of weeks of school, everybody's sick of seeing baseball cards, baseball gloves, the skateboard, whatever boring show-and-tell thing six-year-olds think is interesting to other people. So I thought to myself, I'm going to opt for a new route. I'm going to choose the tell option. And when I chose that tell option, let me tell you, I wove a tapestry of falsehood to my schoolmates concerning my ownership of the most miraculous pet ever. At least the most miraculous pet I could imagine. And that pet was not one, not two, not three or four, but five. Count them, five pet parrots, all living together in my family's house. Now, I gave all of these parrots names, Petey, Polly, Patrick, Prince, and Perry, and I gave them all the ability to speak, and they were the pride and joy of my family. So I carried that lie on for most of the school year, periodically updating my classmates on the exploits of the family birds. In one case, there was a mishap that took place at a restaurant, because in my world, you see, parrots could go to restaurants. I went so far as to create a sign on Valentine's Day. Now, while everyone else was drawing pictures of their brothers or their mothers or their fathers, I cut out a paper heart and wrote, "Love is my parrots." And my teacher posted my picture of my parrots on the wall of excellence. So there for the whole world to see was my lie. It was like a single unblinking eye that was staring me in the face every single day. And the worst part is, my classmates were hooked. They wanted updates on what was going on with these birds all the time. It got so that I couldn't keep up. I felt like I'd told every story I had to tell, but at the beginning of show and tell, someone would put up their hand and say, "I want Scott to tell me about those parrots." Well, it was clear I was caught in my own web of lies. There were no parrots, and in fact, I was starting to forget little details of the story, like what were their actual names. And so I realized I had but one option. I had to kill off my beloved birds. Now, the stories of the parrots' deaths were every bit as dramatic as their adventures in life had been. Two died in a fight with a dog, another died in a fire, and one flew out of the car window into an oncoming bus while we were taking it for a drive. And eventually, the stories of these incredible parrots and their incredible deaths was too much for my teacher, who had enough, and wrote my mom a note, in cursive, which I could not yet read. As I came home that day, my mother stared at me and said, "Tell me about these parrots." I asked my mom what she was talking about, and she said, "That's what the note says. It says, tell me about these parrots." Caught as I was, I confessed the entire thing, while my mother, suppressing laughter the entire time, said, "So you told a little white lie. It's no big deal." But the more I revealed to her just how long this lie had been going on for, the harder it was for her not to laugh in my little five-year-old face. You should remember that I told this lie so that I would stand apart from my classmates. But my fear in getting caught was everyone would find out and I'd get a little more separation than I was bargaining for. I was afraid I would be a pariah. And you know, my mom and my teacher did one of the nicest things for me they ever possibly could. They kept my little white lie to themselves. So thanks, Mom. Thanks, Miss Gatherum. You guys did me a solid. I'm Scott Montgomery. And that's the biggest lie I ever told.
Oh dear, the tangled webs we weave when we make up stories about parrots. Now, I have a bit in common with Scott because, I've often been accused of being an exaggerator of the truth. I can't help it. It's in my blood. I come from a long line of dramatic Cantonese women. The Lee ladies live large. My grandma had the tallest black beehive in all of East Vancouver. And my mom once told us that helicopters were circling our house because the authorities were spying on us. A slight exaggeration for dramatic effect. But I mean, how can you be a storyteller and not stretch the truth? I'm going to tell you about one instance when a bold-faced lie definitely had its advantages. It was 2 years ago at the Toronto International Film Festival. I was standing at the end of a very long lineup of people clamoring to get into a hosh-posh party with a free oyster bar. Word spread down the line that the only way you could get in is if you were on the guest list. I was not on the guest list, but darn it, that wasn't going to stop me. I stormed to the front of the line, dragging my friend James. James Coppola. No relation to the Maverick filmmaking clan. James's family of Coppolas hail from a line of petty criminals out of Hoboken, New Jersey. Basically, what happened was, I pretended to be James's publicist, and I tore a strip out of the bouncers for not letting the James Coppola, nephew of Francis Ford Coppola, into the party. Their jaws dropped, and the crowd parted for us like I was Moses in the Red Sea. That night, the drinks and oysters flowed freely. The owner of the restaurant phoned James up the next day, wanting to treat him to the best Italian meal in Toronto. But James Coppola, hungover and satiated, declined his offer.
This is the best of Definitely Not the Opera, straight from our radio workshop to your headphones.
David Livingston Smith studies evolutionary biology. He teaches at the University of New England, and one of the things he teaches is how us humans are hardwired for lying. Dr. Smith, what do you say to people, you know, who say, oh, I'm always honest. I can't think of a lie I've ever told.
Well, I would say either they are lying to the person they're telling that to, or worse, they're lying to themselves about their own behavior. I mean, if you look at yourself closely, what you will discover, almost certainly, is that a lot of not only your verbal communications, but your nonverbal communications are deceptive. That is, they're designed to misleadingly manipulate other people's perceptions of you.
So why do you think we do lie?
Oh, that's very simple. I mean, we lie for the same reason that all sorts of other organisms deceive, which is that it works. It provides advantages, that we can acquire benefits through successful deception that would be difficult or impossible to acquire through more straightforward means.
Mm. What are those things that we wish to acquire? I mean, what are some of the main reasons why we lie? What is it that we want?
Just look at fundamental human motives. We lie because we want to be loved. We lie for sex. We lie for money. We lie for status. We lie to avoid bother and irritation. Anything that human beings want that might cause them to come into conflict with others with different wants are candidates for lying.
So you studied an interesting aspect of lying, the biological aspect, the evolutionary aspect. What are the evolutionary benefits of lying?
Well, let's be clear about what we mean by lying first. When I talk about lying, I don't mean lying in the narrow sense, which is consciously, deliberately offering verbal untruths with the intention to mislead. That's a little corner of lying. So as I intimated before, lying is much broader than that. Lying is about how we hold ourselves. It's about dyeing our hair or wearing cosmetics or avoiding saying certain things rather than saying things, or swaggering when we're nervous and so on. So if we look at lying in this broad sense, lying is practically universal in nature. I can't think of any animal. I don't know that much about plants, but plants lie too. I can't think of any animal that doesn't deceive in some way. And the reason for that is that deception aids organisms in the struggle for survival, which Darwin identified as the engine of evolution. So anything that gives an organism an edge against its competitors for scarce resources, will tend to get selected in, become part of an organism's behavioral repertoire. And lying gives organisms such an edge.
Wow. Hey, so if then, you know, lying is key to our species survival and all species survival, can you tell me about some instances when animals lie?
Sure. Let me give you an example, of a well-known example, the western hognose snake, which is a non-poisonous snake, lives in North America. Adults get 3 feet long or so. And when the hognose snake is approached by a possible predator, it disguises itself as a very dangerous customer. It flattens its head to give the characteristic appearance of a rattlesnake. It strikes viciously, keeping its mouth closed, by the way, all the time, because it couldn't do any damage if it bit anything. If that doesn't work, what the snake does is that it flips on its back with its mouth open and its tongue lolling out, pretending to be dead. So the snake, in effect, tells two lies to avoid what it takes to be danger. The first lie is, I'm a badass customer, don't mess with me. And if that doesn't work, I'm dead. Now, of course, some animals will eat dead snakes. So what the hognose snake does is that it secretes an odor to convince its potential predator that it's not only dead, but it's rotten.
Yeah, don't eat me. I taste
don't
horrible.
I tell you, I'm disgusting. I've been lying around for days rotting in the sun.
That is so interesting.
I mean, there are many more spectacular examples of deception in nature than that. My favorite is it's not an animal, it's a plant, it's the mirror orchid, which is a kind of orchid that grows around the Mediterranean, and they have a very interesting pollination strategy. The orchids produce a flower that resembles the female of the pollinating species of wasp. The flower blooms at a time when there are only male wasps around. And the flower resembles the female so precisely that these males flying around, you know, looking for action, think that they're female wasps. They land on the flowers, attempt to mate with them, and eventually flies off in disgust, only to land on another pseudo-female and thereby cross-pollinate the plants. So what the mirror orchid does, in effect, is it publishes wasp pornography to manipulate the behavior of the wasp. The wasp
sounds
is
like
a sucker.
It sounds like a flower is a blow-up doll.
Yeah, exactly right. That's what it does.
Well, let's go back to, you know, human beings. You were saying, you know, we're the only animal that is capable of proffering verbal untruths.
Yes.
Okay, how does our source of, you know, our kinds of lies differ when they're specifically so manipulative?
Like our closest relatives, the chimpanzees, we are capable of tactical lying. That is, we can take advantage of certain opportunities that we can identify and flexibly manipulate our behavior. But we're much better at this than chimpanzees because we're much smarter. We're highly intelligent. So our high intelligence includes a high level of social intelligence, and lying is a big part of social intelligence. Now, not only do we have this sort of intelligence, but we also have the gift for language. The evolution of language was very important to our species. It's very, very beneficial. But it also allows us to paint false pictures of reality at very little cost. You know, as the saying goes, words are cheap. So it's very easy to tell anyone anything, and just uttering the words doesn't extract any cost, so we're able to do this very readily. We don't have to put our money where our mouth is.
Well, okay. Doc, your final take on lies. Are they a necessary evil, or perhaps not even evil at all? Are they natural? Are they good? Are they bad?
Well, something could be bad and natural. I wouldn't say that lies are intrinsically evil. After all, if you were a German in 1942 and the Gestapo came to your door and asked if you were harboring any Jews, and indeed you were, I would submit that it would be a morally good thing to lie to the Gestapo rather than to tell the truth. So I would say that lies in themselves are neutral. And are they inevitable? Absolutely.
What is one of the lies you're living now?
I'm trying to present myself as far more impressive than I am on this program.
Why? For food, sex, or status?
A, for status, and B, in the hope that listeners will buy copies of my book, so money too.
You're hilarious. That was philosophy professor Dr. David Livingston Smith. He is the author of the book you should buy, Why We
Good.
Lie, The Evolutionary Roots of Deception and the Unconscious Mind.
You've downloaded the best of Definitely Not the Opera. Hey, thanks for doing that.
We all know the old saying, honesty is the best policy. But is it really? I mean, if you're honest with yourself, you'll admit that you probably tell lies all the time. Maybe not whoppers, but things like the old, let's get together sometime, I'll call you, routine, or sorry I'm late, traffic was terrible. Why are we all such fibbers anyway? And if everyone's doing it, can it really be that bad? Vancouver writer Rachel Sanders decided to find out. Rachel, fess up. Are your pants on fire?
Oh, definitely, yes. For starters, I'm just as guilty of those I'll call you sometime type lies as anyone else. But most of all, I lie to my kids.
About what?
Oh, about anything that's going to make my life easier, basically. Anything from, oh, sorry, honey, the cookies are all gone, to your goldfish got sick, so Daddy had to take him back to the pet store for some medicine.
Right. What really happened to the goldfish, Rachel?
Oh, the fish got flushed, I'm afraid. And I do feel a little bad about some of those cop-outs, but I take comfort from knowing that I'm not the only one who does it. According to a 1996 study at the University of Virginia by psychologist Bella DiPaolo, most adults lie once or twice a day. That's once for every 5 social interactions.
Whoa, so then every 5th person we meet, we lie to. We are a pretty insincere bunch.
It seems that way, doesn't it? Yeah. And there's a movement called radical honesty that says this lying habit of ours is damaging to our health and our relationships. And radical honesty encourages people to say whatever comes into their heads as a way of breaking down personal barriers and forming more authentic relationships.
Sounds like trouble to me.
Me too, yeah. To get some insight on it, I called up A.J. Jacobs. He's a writer and editor-at-large for Esquire magazine. He's done several interesting social experiments, and one of those was spending a month practicing radical honesty.
How did it go for him?
Well, he says before the experiment, he used to tell dozens of lies every day, and since he tried radical honesty, he does lie less about some things.
I lie less about myself and my flaws. I found that, there's something very liberating about not putting up a facade and not pretending you're better than you are and just saying, here are my flaws, you know, hope you like me, take me or leave me as I am.
So he no longer lies to make himself look better.
Right, yeah, those are called lies of self-enhancement. And I think most of us do this to some extent, maybe even just in little ways. It doesn't really hurt other people to do that, but it does, I think, create barriers between yourself and others if you're not honest about yourself.
Hmm. Well, it sounds like this radical honesty worked out well for AJ.
In some ways it did, yeah, but other truths that he told during the experiment didn't go over quite so well.
You know, there were times that it created extremely awkward situations. I remember there was, my wife and I went to a restaurant, and we have kids, and she saw an old acquaintance from college, and the friend said, you know, oh, it's so great to see you, we should all get together. And since I was practicing radical honesty, I had to say what I felt, which was, you know what, you seem nice, but I really don't want to get together with you. I have enough friends that I don't get to see. And it was just so awkward, and my wife was furious. The poor woman sort of stomped out. And, you know, if I regret that. I think that there were better ways to handle that.
Talk about blunt. That kind of truth seems a little mean.
It does, yeah. The kinds of lies we tell to make other people feel good are called pro-social lies, and I don't think those ones are so bad at all. Here's my brother-in-law, Kyle, talking about a social situation in which he always feels he has to lie.
Well, I myself am an actor, and the theater community in general can be a myriad of lies. For example, when you see a play that's terrible, you have to lie, especially if it's your friends, because you don't want to step on somebody's dreams. I mean, this is something that they want to do for a living, and this is something that that's a big part of them, so you can't just tear it. I mean, be easy to tear somebody down for something like that, but that's just not very human. That's not very nice. So, yeah, it's just about being nice, I guess.
It is tough to tell a friend that their art is no good. But Rachel, I mean, isn't honesty important in friendship?
That's a good question. Yeah, I thought so too. But according to my friend Amanda, it's not. Here she is describing a time she was straight up with a good friend of hers.
A very close male friend of mine, he wanted to know what my opinion was of his girlfriend. And his girlfriend had actually come to visit me the day before. And she said a bunch of things I wasn't in, you know, too fond of about my male friend. And so I brought this up with him. And I let him know that, you know, I don't really think she's right for you. I don't like some of the things she said about you. And, you know, and I went into, you know, somewhat detail of what she had said. And he was like, okay, yeah, good. So, and then that was kind of the end of it. And at the time, I thought, okay, good, we're best friends. I was honest with you. And, you know, that's what friends should be, right? Honest with one another. They are now engaged. And my opinion didn't matter, obviously. And we're no longer friends. So it completely severed our relationship. And it's really, really sad because I lost a friend, you know, a very close friend who we'd been friends with for over 20 years. And that no longer exists. So I do regret telling the truth.
Whoa, that's harsh consequences. She sounds like she's getting all choked up there. So their friendship ended as a result of telling the truth.
Yeah, even though he asked for her opinion, her friend didn't really want to hear the truth.
I guess in some ways, you know, we rely on our friends to protect us from harsh realities.
Yeah, we don't always want the truth from our friends. Sometimes I think we just want them to tell us everything's going to be okay, to prop us up, to support us no matter what mistakes we're making.
So then a lot of these daily lies we tell, are those for the benefit of our friends?
Yeah, sometimes we're trying to make things easier on ourselves, sure. But other times we lie to avoid hurting someone's feelings or to make someone feel better. In fact, in that University of Virginia study I mentioned earlier, they found that 1 in 4 of the lies told by participants were told for the benefit of another person.
Altruistic lying. Kind of sweet.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. A.J. Jacobs describes white lies as social lubricant.
I lie less than I used to, but I still find you need to lie a lot to get by in society without, you know, having your marriage fall apart, losing your job, having your kids screaming all the time.
And I'll go a step further than that as well and say that lying is not only useful for protecting your relationships, it's actually vital to your survival.
What do you mean?
Well, now I'm talking about lying to yourself. Studies have shown that a certain amount of self-deception is crucial to a person's sense of well-being.
So what are some of the things we lie to ourselves about?
Oh, anything. Things such as our own skills and abilities, our attractiveness, as well as the amount of control we have over any given situation. Evidence from some psychology studies has shown that a person's ability to exaggerate these kinds of things, essentially to delude yourself, has a positive effect on your mental health.
Right, because the truth hurts. And lying is good for you.
It really is. Grab a pair of rose-colored glasses. They'll help you face the day.
Hey, thank you for giving us the straight goods, Rachel.
Thanks for having me, Sukyan.
DNTO contributor Rachel Sanders is a Vancouver-based writer. Okay, so sometimes lies backfire on you, but sometimes lying gets you exactly what you want. Joining me from a tour stop in Kelowna is Winnipeg singer-songwriter Rami Mays. Hello, Rami.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. So, hey, Rami, what's the best lie you ever told?
I guess I was about 20 years old, and I was busking around and hitchhiking around Canada quite a bit, and I ended up in Vancouver with a friend of mine who actually plays with the Derangers, Chris Saywell, and I was busking, and this guy came up and gave me a Beastie Boys ticket for the concert that was being played that night. But anyway, and of course I needed money more than I needed to go to the Beastie Boys concert. But we went down and I scalped the ticket for like $80 and we were pretty stoked on that. And we saw the buses, you know, like the tour buses. We saw Mike D come out and like get something from the bus. And Chris is a really big Beastie Boys fan, so he's like, Mike D, Mike D, and got him to sign his hat. And once Mike D went back, and we realized we had to get in the concert. So that's when Operation Lie started. And what I did was basically I just started talking to anybody that would listen that was kind of behind the gate. And I made up a story that we had hitchhiked from Winnipeg solely for this concert and that we had tickets. And that what had happened was that our stuff was stolen on Robson Street that day. So, like, our bags were gone, and that was it. And so we didn't have the tickets. We didn't have any money. We were stuck there, and all we wanted to do was see the concert. So I ended up telling, like, you know, a few rounds of people, like, someone would go get somebody, and then till eventually we got the road manager. And by this time, like, Chris is totally putting it on. Like, he's, like, kicking the dirt behind me, and, like, I've got tears in my eyes. I'm like, I just want to go see the concert. And so the guy's like, okay, let's do this. So he pulls out these, like, VIP stickers that are humongous. They're like the size of a Kleenex box. And he just puts the, like, these shiny satin things, puts one on me, puts one on Chris, and moves the gate open and lets us in with him. And we're like, holy man, what the hell is if this is happening? And so he walks us through the crowd into the back of the arena. We walk past MCA like shooting hoops pre-game. We're like, hey man, how's it going? And then he pulls like this humongous velvet curtain, like this chain in the bottom, huge velvet curtain. And it ends up putting us beside the stage, like. And so, you know, all kinds of cool stuff happened. Like, at one point during Root Down, MCA, like, came to the end of the stage and, like, I got to sing into the mic and all this cool stuff. So that was a pretty big lie. I had to cry for it. I had to belittle myself. But but I recovered pride-wise and totally rocked an awesome Beastie Boys concert.
Oh, man, your lying sob story paid off big time.
Did it ever. Yeah, it was pretty badass.
That's great. Okay, so you're going to play a song for us. What have you got, Rami?
Well, on this tour, we've been promoting my new album, Aching in Your Bones. Pretty proud of it. We're doing Canada, Europe, U.S., and it's been going great. And I have these great guys, also known as the Weber Brothers, unto themselves, these four members of that band, backing me up. And so we're going to, Sam is here with me, and we're going to do the title track for you, Aching in Your Bones.
Creeps into my veins like a steady pulse of light. Sleeping through the days, I'm up all hours of the night. I'm distant from the world like an empty hollow stare. Closer to the end, but I don't care. The West Coast sun is warm, but them folks don't like to smile. Followed up them trail of crumbs to Eddie's quarter mile. The prairies call my name each time I feel the eastern breeze. But I turn my back to walk these empty streets. I spent 40 hours coming down that Greyhound bus alone. 40 hours ain't too long when you don't have a home. 40 hours longing for a place to call your own. It's 40 hours aching in your bones. Scars upon my body remind me of my age. A lonesome disconnection from the inside to the cage. If I had only listened to these thoughts inside my head, I wonder where I might have been instead. And I once thought I loved you, and maybe then I did. You might have loved me too, but I was just a rambling kid. And I see it all so clearly now, I had to leave you then. And I knew I'd never see you again. I spent 40 hours coming down that Greyhound bus alone. 40 hours ain't too long when you don't have a home. 40 hours longing for a place to call your own. It's 40 hours aching in your bones. 40 hours aching in your bones.
That is Rami Mays and Sam Weber performing Aching in Your Bones in the DNTO studios. Rami, that is a heck of a hard luck story.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer, hey?
I mean, you could have played that for the manager of the Beastie Boys and he would have given you a lifetime free pass.
Yeah, totally. That's why I write these songs, for pity.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, it's an interesting aspect. I mean, how much of the lyrics of that song are true and how much was a stretch of the truth?
Actually, that's pretty autobiographical. I was younger, also in Vancouver, a short time after that last story, and I sort of settled out there for a little while and was having a rough go, and called my mom in the middle of the night at some point and was just like, you got to get me on the next Greyhound bus. Like, I am hard done by out here. It is is hard. So I got on the next Greyhound bus, and it was like 40 hours back to Winnipeg where I'm from. So it was a really long, awful, broke, lonely bus ride. And it took me years to think about writing that in a song. So that one's pretty autobiographical. Not all my songs are completely first person, but that one is.
Right, and a truthful tale from the life of you. Well,
See,
I'm glad things are looking up for you. You're still on the road. Couldn't keep away for that long.
It's not all that bad anymore. That was a long time ago. Things are really great now, yeah.
Well, good luck with everything, Rami, and thanks so much for stopping by to play for us today.
Thanks so much for having me. Right on.
Rami Mays is touring Western Canada right now, so check out her website, Rami Mays, RomiMayes.com for dates. Her latest album is Aching in Your Bones. Okay, so generally people believe that we should not lie to our parents, but sometimes you just can't help it. Here with our last word on lying is Trish Cooper.
When I was about 8 or 9, my dad, who was a lifelong devoted smoker, had a mild heart attack. And he was like a hardcore smoker. Like, I think it was 3 or 4 packs a day. Maybe it was 2 or 3 packs. I don't know. But it was a lot of smoking. And so me and my 2 sisters, who were both older, and my mom, obviously very concerned, wanted him to quit. And he quit. So it was a big deal, a big celebration. You know, there was a lot of licorice bought, a lot of... he was walking all the time, and it was like a big triumphant moment. And then I think it was a couple of months, he started again, but he started sneaking them. And we all knew. He would go upstairs to the bathroom and just open the window and smoke. You know, there were ashtrays that had been put away that all of a sudden came out. He was like sneaking around, hiding cigarettes and pretending, you know, that he wasn't smoking. But, you know, looking back, what was weird is that we never called him on it. I don't know, I guess we were all complicit in the lie. I totally remember coming up behind him and watching him like butt out his smoke, but I waited until he was finished his cigarette because I didn't want to surprise him. So it was kind of like, hey, you know, so I was giving him a moment to, you know, put out his cigarette and then turn around, and then we'd both fake it that I didn't see it and I didn't smell it and he didn't do it. And so, yeah, we were all in on it and nobody, you know, said anything. We were too like, do-do-do-do-do, that's not happening. Dad quit smoking, and the idea of him starting again and getting sick again was just too hard to deal with, I guess. Looking back on it now, I think the reason that we kept up the lie is because it was really the only thing that he couldn't do for us. He was a pretty awesome dad, and so this was like something that we wanted that he couldn't give us. I mean, it wasn't because he hadn't tried. Like, we'd watched him go through it and try and try, and then to see him like lie to us, which he'd never done before and was not his style, it was like, wow, this one must be serious. Like, this has got to be hard. So somehow we understood that, I guess. It was the big thing that we had bugged him about for years, and somehow, I guess, we wanted to give him a break.
Thanks, Trish. So sometimes a lie can go beyond good or bad. It just is. And that, Pod People, brings us to the end of all this lying. Email your honest opinions, stories, comments, and questions to dnto@cbc.ca. You can also call the DNTO Truth Line, 1-866-630-3686. That's 1-866-630-DNTO. And be sure to visit our website, cbc.ca/DNTO, to find out when we're on in your neighborhood. Definitely Not the Opera is brought to you by a gang of Pinocchios: Doug Holmes, Anna Lazowski, Joff Schmidt, and Claire Lawler. Our Geppetto and executive producer is Iris Uday. I'm Sue Kinley. Take good care of yourself, and let's meet back here next week.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.